Dear Mom and Dad, I'm writing to ask you to do something that is oh so important. Would you please tell Santa how very hard I've tried this year and what a great reward I surely have earned? You know that I've been hoping to find something special under the tree, and I feel that I have more than proven that I deserve it. For example, each morning I made sure to wake you up at least 3 hours early to be sure you had enough time to get ready. And you may have noticed that I did not complain about any of the dinners you made this year, even though I had plenty of opportunities. I even helped you conserve electricity by making sure your phone was unplugged every night before bed. And I know how stressful it can be to see my hamper full of dirty clothes, so this year I decided to help by keeping them out of sight under my bed. I have done most of my chores, nearly all of my homework, practiced telling the truth, sharing my toys, returning my library books, making my bed, taking my shoes off at the door, picking up after myself, rinsing my dishes, remembering to wash my hands, floss, hang up my towel, and be polite. Also, did I mention that I did all of this without drawing any attention to my good deeds even once? I hope it was enough, because I tried. Please pass this on to Santa, though I am sure he has noticed that I have been working really hard. With love, your dear child.
Well, Christmas is a great time of year, isn't it? Especially through the eyes of kids, because kids always know that you better watch out, you better not cry, you better not pout. I'm telling you why. He's making a list. He's checking it twice. He's going to find out who's naughty or nice. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake, which that's a little creepy. He knows when you've been bad or good. So be good for goodness sake. And so because of that, because kids have this one gift or maybe several gifts in mind that they really, really want to get on Christmas morning, and they know they've got to be good to get it, they are on their best behavior, aren't they? All throughout December? No, they're not. They at least try to be on their best behavior, but then at some point their 5-year-old brain or their 10-year-old brain kicks in and they just start acting like a kid again. And then at some point they realize, I'm supposed to be being good for goodness sake. And they try to get back in line. And then the whole Christmas season ends up being this ebb and flow between them behaving and trying to be really good, but then failing and realizing, oh yeah, I need to be good so I can get what I want. And the interesting thing is that for us adults, we can do the same thing. Now, it's not for the same reason. It's not the same thing that motivates us. We don't necessarily want a specific gift. For us, it's in order to feel like a good person at the end of the Christmas season, in order to feel like a good husband, a good wife, in order to feel like a good parent, in order to feel like a good friend, we pull out all the stops at Christmas. We go over the top. We make the most of every moment. We take things, some could say, maybe even to a little bit of an extreme. I mean, why just put a few lights out in the front yard when you can cover your entire house in 10,000 twinkling lights? Why purchase just one gift when customers who purchased this also purchased ... Few of us guilty of that this Christmas season. Why get the 3-foot inflatable when you can get the 18-foot tall Frosty the Snowman? And why do this? Why only go to one family gathering and eat only one meal at Christmas time when you can hit up like 3 family gatherings in one day and have a progressive Golden Corral experience all day long at Christmas? You see, we're all tempted to try to cram everything in and get everything done and go over the top during the holiday season in order to feel like we've done our part at the end of the year. But where this leaves us, let's be honest, I mean, it leaves us stressed and overwhelmed, doesn't it? I mean, why do we do this to ourselves in a season that promises us peace? It's what leads us to quote the great theologian, Ellen Griswold from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, when she looked at her husband and said, well, I don't know, Clark. All I can say is that it's Christmas and we're all in misery. But we try so hard and things don't ever really pan out the way we want them to. A season starts with excitement but can very quickly turn to stress. It starts with, oh, the whole family's gonna be here under one roof for Christmas. We're all excited, and then we realize, oh, that means the whole family is gonna be together under one roof. But this is when the beauty of Christmas really begins to play out. When we come to the end of ourselves, when we come to the end of our striving and our efforts, and still things don't work out perfectly, it's in those moments where our joy has to come from something outside of our circumstances. And it's in these moments that God has the opportunity to shine light on where our true joy comes from. A sturdier joy, a steadier joy, a joy that lasts. If you think back to the first Christmas before Jesus was born, the world was really left wondering where it stood with God. And the only response was to try harder and to do more, to try to work their way into God's favor. And this played out in a number of different ways in different religions and all around the world. People just trying harder, trying to do more in order to please God. Ancient Judaism had promised a savior. They had predicted that a Messiah would come that would be a blessing to the entire world. This Messiah would take away the sin of the world. But before he came, people were in darkness. There was only waiting, striving, and trying to get it all right and keep it all right so that God would be happy with them. And their good deeds never really seemed to be enough, because no matter how good they were today, there was always tomorrow where they had to wake up and do it all over again and keep everything together all over again. And this left them empty and in the dark. But then in the midst of this darkness, light showed up. I love the way the gospel writer John describes the account of Jesus's birth. John was a disciple of Jesus. He was with Jesus during his ministry on earth. He saw Jesus teach. He saw Jesus heal people and perform miracles. And then he also was standing right there when his Savior was crucified on a cross. But John was one of the first to hear the news that Jesus had risen from the grave, that Jesus is alive. And then the next morning after the resurrection, John had breakfast on the beach with Jesus. And you can imagine what that did to his faith. To have his master, his teacher, this man he had followed, to see him die and then see him again alive 3 days later. John's faith exploded. It's no surprise that he became an integral part of the early church in the first century. And he saw it grow and expand in the face of tremendous opposition. And late in his life, some 40, 50 years after the time of Jesus, John wanted to create an account of all the things that he experienced firsthand with Jesus, the things he heard with his own ears, the things he saw and witnessed with his own eyes. And here's how John documents the life of Jesus, the beginning of his gospel. He says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning." John describes Jesus as the Word. What do words do? Words describe. They explain. They communicate. And John, looking back 40 or 50 years later on the life of Jesus and seeing what the church of Jesus had done over the previous decades, he said that's what Jesus came to do. He came to show us the Father. He came to communicate God's love to us. He continued and he said, "In him was life. In him was life." John was saying that there's more than just a beating heart and air in his lungs. There's more than just the life that everyone else experiences. In Jesus was life unlike anything else the world had ever seen. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. What does light do? Well, it illuminates, it reveals. It shows you what's true. It displays reality. It awakens us. This is the way that John describes Jesus's life. He said it was almost as if we were in darkness and light showed up when Jesus showed up. And he says that this light was for all mankind. This light wasn't limited to a certain group of people. It wasn't just for those who had behaved well. It wasn't just for those who had kept everything together. Those that had checked all the boxes and followed all the rules. It wasn't just for people that were from a certain place or from a certain family. No, this light was for everyone. And then, as John talks about this light that was about to enter the world, John tells us the Christmas story. Now, it's not the one that we're used to hearing. That's the Gospel of Luke. That's the one that's read every Christmas, that in those days, Caesar Augustus issued a decree that a census should be taken. You see, Luke's account is very detailed. It's very specific. He covers every detail of the account of the birth of Jesus. John doesn't do that. John just steps back and gives us the big picture. He says, hey, here's what was happening at Christmas. And it only takes him one verse, one short sentence to tell the Christmas story. And this is what John says. He says, the Word became flesh. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. The Word, Jesus, life, the light of the world, with the Father in the very beginning, of the same substance as the Father, the very essence of God, he became a man. Emmanuel, God with us. The light of the world put on a body. He became a human. He became like you and like me. And in an even greater show of humility, he didn't come as a king or as a warrior or as some sort of royalty. He came as a baby. The light of the world, wrapped in raggedy clothes and laid in a manger. Imagine that. The light of the world laid in this feeding trough for these animals in this barn. I love that John says that he made his dwelling among us. John was saying, look, Jesus didn't just show up for a few days and leave. He didn't come just to fix the problems and get out of here really quickly. No, he came to stay a while. He came and made his dwelling among us. And it wouldn't be until years later that people began to understand what his light was all about. As he taught in a new way. And as he loved those that were unlovable. As he touched those that were untouchable. As he spoke words that in that day were considered unspeakable. And then he predicted his own death, his resurrection. And he went to the cross. And in that moment, darkness rejoiced as if the light of the world had been snuffed out. But 3 days later, Jesus rose from the dead, proving that all he said was true, that all he taught was true, including the fact that he came to save all of mankind. He came to take the place of all of us who have fallen short in our own efforts. And in that moment, Jesus was seen for what he was. Jesus was seen for what he came to do. The way that John described it, that Jesus came to light up the entire world through the grace and the forgiveness that he offered. The people in the first century no longer had to continue working to earn God's favor. They didn't have to worry about whether or not they were okay with God because of Jesus' work on their behalf. And here's the beautiful thing. The same grace is offered to you and to me today. That in the midst of our striving, in the midst of trying to get everything right and make everything great, yet we still fall short, we still don't get it right, things still don't work out perfectly, the grace of God offered to us through Jesus is available to you and to me. And when we receive it, when we accept this gift that God the Father sent us at Christmas, it lights up our lives.
dear child, as you sleep tonight, there is no doubt that your heart is full of hope and wishful dreams for what extravagant surprise tomorrow may bring. I've seen you work so hard to be good, to do what's right, even when you think no one is watching. I noticed when you went that extra mile, did more than what was asked, tried harder than was expected, all in hopes that you had done just enough. And I watched, though hard as you tried, you made a mistake. You fell out of line, missed the mark, and failed. You didn't know that I watched as you cried, that my heart broke along with yours, though not because you lost the favor that you had been working so hard to gain, but because you thought you needed to earn it in the first place. All of that working, trying, and endless striving, checking all the boxes and trying to do enough, trying to be enough, none of that could earn my approval or add to what you deserve. Because it was never about that anyway. This is not a story of being good enough. It's a story of hope, of being chosen, reconciled, and rescued. A story of sacrifice, of redemption, and of a love so powerful you still feel it thousands of years later. A world that was broken and weary, didn't need another set of rules or a debt it couldn't pay. It needed something bigger, something better, something only a father could give. This dark world needed a light.
Oh, light, our hopes.
was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it.